Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. Today, we are talking about why do you ever need to be an architect?
This is something that, as we've gotten more into the design world, I am shocked how few people understand what goes on in architecture, why you need an architect, why you need good design. So yes, this needs to be a topic of conversation.
So really, we've had a lot of questions around the subject. So we're just going to hit it generally. I know nothing really about this. I'm kind of asking the same question. I actually asked my dad today, is it worth me pursuing an architect degree to do that? I don't know,
would it help the business?
Yeah, yeah. Right? As an aspect of Hull, would that be a beneficial bring to the business? As you have an architect on it on salary right now, but you most of the time do your designs and then get them stamped by an architect?
No.
Architect? No.
So, yes, it's a misunderstood world.
It definitely is. I don't know anything.
Basically, architecture came of age in America in the 1870s, 1880s. Very first architecture schools, Columbia, MIT was one. A number of the top early architects actually went to school in France to the École des Beaux-Arts.
Bless you.
Those places, that influence of the School of Fine Arts in France, as well as going to the kind of those Ivy League schools, was how most architects got a degree. Frank Lloyd Wright never had an architecture degree. He was an engineer. A lot of great architects from that period weren't quote unquote architects. They had learned the trade. And so what's happened in that world is that in order to be a licensed architect, you have to go to school, but then also practice, and you're practicing under a licensed architect or someone like that.
Almost like an apprenticeship.
It's like an apprenticeship. And so the problem that's happened is it's really hard to, or it takes a long time to get your architecture license. Now, the thing that's even more confusing is that you don't need an architecture's license to build a residential house, at least in Texas, right? So you don't have to have an architect stamp those plans. There's very few licensed architects that are designing residential plans mm-hmm. in Texas and around us because it's not required. I don't think it's required until you get into a commercial space or a building over 20,000 feet, right? So you don't need an architect to build a house. And yet the architects are put through all this work in order to be an architect, but it doesn't really apply to residential, it applies more to commercial. And then the third piece is that, and this is the hardest part for me.
The kicker.
Is that most architects aren't trained in traditional architecture. So they're trained in modern architecture. So how do you expect them to go design and build for you a traditional house when they don't understand what those rules of architecture are? So, right, it's just like, wait, so like if I wanted to build an important architectural house in Texas, there are three or four firms that I can think of in Houston, Austin, Dallas, that are really good architects, really talented in traditional design, and really great firms. Only three, right? Maybe four, maybe there's five or six. Yeah, I mean, there's less than 10, mm-hmm. in my opinion. You also have what's called a draftsman, okay? And a draftsman sometimes is someone who sometimes went to architecture school but never pursued their degree. There's the people called the AIBD, American Institute of Building Designers, would be someone who went to get an architecture degree in college but never practiced as an architect. I had a partner who was an AIBD guy for a while, and he designs, thousands of houses a year. And so the builder will say, and here's the fourth part that makes it hard. Homeowners don't know what architects do.
Yeah.
Okay. Homeowners don't understand what the value, and they think, well, I have to have an architect to design my house. 1%, maybe 3% is the numbers I've heard of people that actually have a house designed by an architect.
Hmm.
And so it's a very low percentage.
Well, not counting production builds, because each production build was designed by an architect, but they're stamps cookie cut, right?
Well, they're not stamped. And a lot of those production builders hire local draftsmen to do their plans. And so they're not hiring architects. Sometimes they'll have an architectural staff, right, that they might have in-house and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I guess the way I'd qualify is you'd have an architectural firm oversee the plans of your house, help you find a builder, walk you through the whole process, do the architectural oversight, and continue to design through that. It's just a low percentage of houses that get built that way. Mm-hmm. Most houses get built today by builders, you know, building specs or building custom houses or building, you know, things that... Yeah.
But couldn't some custom houses come from an architect, or do they just not?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, okay. Yeah.
But you're saying 1% of them?
It's 1% to 3%.
Wow.
And so...
I guess in my mind, I'm like floored by that, because I think my first thought, if I'm trying to build a new home... And I'm like, oh, well, build my own home. I'm calling an architect.
I know.
Maybe just architect.com, you know?
Well, then you're looking for someone. Then what you're doing.
I'm not looking for a firm necessarily. Like if I'm building a starter home, but I want to build it, I'm going to just try and find some guy who is an architect, you know?
No, I get it. And that happens. And so the problem is that a lot of times those houses get designed, like all of my Wednesday design videos, I would say 20% of those are designed by an architect. Mm-hmm. 100% are, they've gone out to get these plans and have tried to get them. They're not necessarily architecturally driven, but they could be a draftsman help put it together.
Okay.
A lot of them will have their builders hook them up with their draftsman, with their architect in-house. And there's what's called a design build firm, and they end up, you know, designing the house.
Yeah.
But a lot of times it's a mess.
I don't know if it's the fault of Seinfeld, but... It seems like a lot of people are like following the George Costanza. Well, I say that I'm an architect.
Yes.
Like, I feel like you fall into that category a lot of times.
People think I'm an architect.
Yeah. I used to describe your job. Like, what does your dad do? Oh, he's an architect. That's what you said. And then you were like, it's actually, I'm a contractor. And I was like, oh, I don't. What's a contractor? I know what an architect is in my mind. I don't know what a contractor, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that I typically will tell people I'm a preservationist more than I tell them that I'm an architect.
See, I mean, I never even heard that word before.
And so that degree in historic preservation is what's driven my world more than anything else. And so it's all of this is so frustrating to me because...
Sorry, I didn't mean to strike a nerve.
How do you get a well-designed house today? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, because of the way architects are trained, because of the way that whole building industry's changed... design industry's changed, is that it's very difficult to get a well-designed house today.
Right.
Because it doesn't mean necessarily you're hiring an architect.
Yeah.
I know a lot of architects who've gone to the Harvard Design School and gotten a master's from Harvard in design that aren't very good designers, right? And so—
Is that because they lack historic orders or
I think there's a skill factor. I mean, there's certainly some people are more skilled and have a better eye for design than others.
Right.
And going to a school like Harvard or, you know, just to pick on Harvard, doesn't necessarily mean that you will build and design beautiful buildings. Mm-hmm. And so the again, how do you get back to get to good design? Now, the way I see it is it's all about historic precedent. It's all about looking to the past, figuring out the way they used to build, the proportions, the scale, the materials, the shapes, all of those different things. If you can get those things right, you are on your way towards a better house.
Yeah.
And I don't care whether you're doing the modern farmhouse. I don't care whether you're doing a Schaus shop house. I don't know, you know, I don't know what, you know, whatever you want to build.
Barn dominium.
Having a historic precedent in there is going to make yours better,
right,
in my opinion. As opposed to hiring an architect, because there's some architects who are really good at floor plans, right? They make a very efficient floor plan. But when you tell them to put the walls around it and build a beautiful house, they're like, oh, that's not really my skill set. It's not really what I do.
Interesting.
And so there's some who are, you know, Mediterranean. I'm a Mediterranean king. I know how to do those Mediterranean houses. But if you ask them to do French, it'd be like, okay, yeah, I got to go look at some books. I don't remember what French is.
But historically, that's pretty typical, right? Like Asher Benjamin wasn't out there going, oh, I'm going to really design a Adobe house.
Well, he was designing in the federal style.
I know. So he like, he was a federal guy. And Greek revival. So, but he wasn't like a, like you go to Asher Benjamin and go, I want a Georgian house. And he goes, I got you. Let me go. You know what I mean? Like,
no, I know.
There's no
I mean, I think historically you look at like a guy named H.H. Richardson, okay? Richardson Romanesque style.
Yeah.
I mean, he had his particular style, which he was really good at. I got an architect friend who did a book. He felt restricted by the book type because he felt like he could design in all these different things, but they wanted him to do this particular style of house.
Oh, interesting.
And so I think guys do get pigeonholed. I do think that, you know, another architect I worked with, he didn't want to favor a style because he wanted the freedom to do whatever he wanted. So seeing all of these different things going on.
So it is more than just, all right.
Yeah. Makes so sense. Anyway, it's then the fourth piece, fifth piece, sixth piece of this thing is how much is it worth?
Yeah.
How much should it cost? And so what is a fair rate, right? Well, we've had a client, and I know this on more than one occasion, of people who have designed a house that was never built and they spent $1 million in the plants. Yeah. And so, you know,
the
majority of houses that architects design will never be built.
Is it because they design it, they stamp it, I'm John Architect and I approve this message, and then they give it to the homeowner, and the homeowners, we like it. We're going to go to a draftsman and they're going to change it up.
No, it's
or more, they we're going to go to Brent. We're
it's
gonna
have more,
Brent change it.
Oh, we just had this great idea. We really want to do this lake house. And you know what? Johnny's getting married. We're actually going to move to another part of the country. Plans change and you just never end up doing it. I mean, that client who designed that house and never built it, how they're going to use the ranch was very different than what they thought. And so that big house that they thought they were going to, you know, build at some point, they've decided they're not going to do that anymore. And so on our design side, we've got 7 architects now, okay? 2 of which are licensed architects, okay? Could stamp a set of plans. Doesn't mean that much to us, doesn't offer that much to us because we just don't need it very much. But we're trying to develop a set of plans that is very practical and usable for people. We feel like in the market, you know, that builder set of plans, which is 6 pages, you know, 4 elevations and 2 floor plans,
yep,
and maybe an electrical plan somewhere, is the cheapest version. And it's just like we were talking about food in that other episode, or, you know, it's just like mush it'd be just as healthy as anything else. Eat your mush. And you're like, gosh, we could, you know, make it better if we'd spend a little bit more time. No, mush. That's what that builder set of plans is like. I know architects who their set of plans will be 80 to 120 pages. Every single wall elevated, every molding elevated, every all the details there.
There's got to be a happy medium, right?
Well, what we think is that there are traditional details like dormers, columns, eaves, moldings that if we could get those details right, a lot of these houses would be better. Windows, getting good windows. And so we think there's 5 or 6 things that we need to focus on to get this there, but I don't think we've necessarily wrestled out the perfect set of plans yet. Anyway, it's just a struggle because I've encouraged guys who came to my Master Builder University to go find some architects to work for. Now, why would I say that? Because I know that in my early career, I talked about John Milner up in Pennsylvania, who I think is a fabulous architect who really studies the past. I learned so much from building one of his houses. We did the Historic Fort Worth Designer Showcase house. We built a Mid-Atlantic Colonial Revival house, and it was fantastic.
Is that Hillary and Caroline's house?
No, this is a house over in River Hills.
Okay.
Gauge brick. I screwed up the gauge brick.
Yeah.
I did not know how to do it. He said my columns were too big, but it was all these little subtle things that once he came and looked at it and we could talk.
So he looked at this house.
Yeah, he
That's
came
kind of
and visited.
Fun.
And he said, and it was clear that I hadn't gotten the details right that I needed to get right. And so I felt like I gained a ton of perspective on importance of certain details to get right. The volute at the bottom of the stairs, the gauge brick that I screwed up.
Gauge brick? Like the
gauge brick
between?
Is the brick over a window that's spread out so that it carries the weight above it.
Okay.
And so it's like a big keystone. But each brick is cut and shaped differently.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that. And so there was
you just took a bunch of bricks and put them up.
Yeah, cut them in, and then I did a cut an angle in one of them, and it was a mess. Okay. And so I look at that now, and I go, and I learned so much from him. Yeah. So was that me just being young and not having a lot of experience, or was that John was really talented and showed me a lot of good stuff? Probably a combination of both. And so
how did that interaction work with him? Were you like, I like this plan that you've drawn, I want to buy it from you? Or
I said we're doing this Stuart Fort Worth show house, and we'd love to do some winter tour rooms. I was going to do 4 rooms from winter tour in there, and we need a house that kind of fit that. I go, do you do a builder set of plans? And a builder set of plans with him was about 20 sheets. Okay, so it wasn't a 8-page set.
Yeah,
there was a lot of details that they get right. In fact, I remember when we were ordering our windows, they were like, no, you need to send us your windows. We need to approve the size of the panes, all the different things that are going on. They put a thicker sill on the bottom of the things because we needed a thicker sill. You need to ask for these details. You need to get this.
Were y'all making your own windows at the time?
No, these were Marvin windows. So okay. I am telling guys to go that did my master builder, you need to go find a good architect and work with him. There's a guy, Connor, is up in Philadelphia. He needs to go work with John Milner and a bunch of these architects up, because he'll learn a ton.
Yeah.
You want to be a master builder, go work with those guys. At the same time, I tell most people that say, I want to go to architecture school, don't. Yeah. Because you're not learning the things that you really, look, if you want to get into residential design and you like the stuff that we're doing, historic preservation degree would be a better degree for you than architecture school.
Yeah.
So, right? I mean, there's just, you're hearing me wrestle with all these different pieces of it. Some of these architects, I think, I think they hung the moon. Most didn't, you know? 1% maybe of architects out there are that good.
Quinlan Terry,
there's another one. I mean, I go listen to that guy talk. I didn't get to build a house with him.
Yeah.
And I learned so much.
Because he sounds cool.
As a British accent.
When you're buying a British house.
Yeah.
One of my classmates, who shall remain undisclosed, his name's Ben, he pushed back a little bit. He also just called me and said, don't mention me on the podcast. So, in your face. No, yeah, I want him to get, yeah. So, he called me recently and it just reminded me, because when you were giving your talk to North Bennett, you said there is not a single architecture school right now that teaches the 5 orders of architecture.
There's only one.
Okay.
And he said there's a bunch.
He said there's a couple. Yeah.
I remember you talking about.
He said there's a couple.
Yeah.
But he specifically mentioned a school in Rhode Island where he was like, they actually do teach that in Rhode Island.
Was it Wentworth?
No. Anyway, so.
So some of these schools will teach a history of architecture class.
Yeah.
But they aren't teaching it in the perspective of this is how you should build.
Like fundamental design, you need this.
We've got a project and we're going to build a store. You can't do it in the classical style.
Yeah.
You need to do it in the modern style.
Right.
And so actually training to design in that traditional style, there's very few.
Can you imagine how frequented a convenience store would be if it was built in the classical style? You know what I mean? Like, even if you
told you the story, the architect who told me he was tired of working for developers because he goes, Brent, all I'm doing is decorating boxes.
Yeah.
And I was like, what does that mean? He goes, think about it. It's a strip mall. They're all little boxes, and you got to decorate each one of them so that it's distinctive and different, and so that it looks fresh and new.
Do you know?
I was sitting there going, decorating boxes? That sounds terrible.
You know Stuart Hicks?
Uh-huh.
I really want to get him on the podcast. I think he'd be really interesting.
He sounds like an interesting guy.
Chicago. He actually just made a video on that, on strip malls, specifically strip malls, and why they're like not great for everything that we believe in and want to do. He does a great job of like explaining everything.
He's a great teacher.
He really is. But it was basically saying like, you might, depending on who you're renting these spaces out to, you may want to be a Japanese style because it's a Japanese restaurant. Or a Adobe style because it's a, whatever. And you're now conflating all these different things. And so you need a box to be a blank canvas to which you can decorate. And then it ends up being decorated really cheaply and it doesn't look very good and it's not a cohesive thing. And anyway, he does a lot of cool videos on a lot of different really nice architectural things. And he made another one recently on, I think, office buildings, where it's the same thing. Where
yeah, no, he's a good teacher.
Historic
exteriors. I think he does a good job of teaching concepts, architectural concepts.
Yeah, he's very visual too. His editing team does like, pretty much all it is the infographics
that
he does. It's like, all right. Yeah, no, it's an interesting problem. So,
well, here's the biggest issue.
Yeah.
Our houses generally are ugly today. Okay.
Okay. Easy.
We need a good designer on board. Okay. And the designers are not engaged to teach. They are not trained to teach traditional designs, which most people want.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up with how do we get good design in housing again? Like, not just our projects or the super wealthy or the beautiful projects. I'm talking about most houses that are built today. How do you get a good house there if our designer in the process is not engaged, not taught and trained that way? It's a real problem.
Yeah. We're opening up a lot of strings here and untying things. Like, what's the fix? What's the solution? Like,
I think that the homeowner needs to ask for better design, right?
I think everything starts with the homeowner.
I think a lot of it does. I mean, because, you know, the builder says, why do I need good design? My houses sell.
Yeah.
And so if his houses stopped selling, I guarantee you he would go look for a good designer.
Right.
Guarantee it.
Yeah.
And he's not because his houses are selling. Mm-hmm. So there's got to be a rejection of that ugly. There's got to be a rejection of it.
I think something that's so interesting is the easiest person to sway the markets and move everything is the homeowner. And I know a lot of our audience is not the homeowner. I know our audience is a lot of builders. And so we're kind of trying to fight the fight as the middleman. If we could get homeowners on our side and just go, hey, you could have more if you just ask for it. Like, you just got to want it, and then people will do it.
If our audience are builders, then what my advice to them is go find an architect who understands traditional design.
And build it.
Well,
build something.
In other words, like, one of the guys that came to Master Builder University had gone up to Notre Dame to hire an architect for their firm because they're doing design build. They want someone on staff who understands what a column should look like and stuff like that. I thought that was smart.
Yeah.
There are a lot of design build firms out there, like a guy who will go unnamed here, said on his podcast that I said that the thing a master builder should know are X, Y, and Z, and one of those things was design. And he goes, like, you know, I know how to do AutoCAD. I understand design. I'm like, wait.
Wrong.
Just because you know how to draw does not mean you understand design.
Yeah.
I mean, those two things, and that probably maybe is the best anecdote for this episode, is that do people really understand design? Do people really understand, you know, what I'm talking about when I say you need a good designer?
That might be an example of semantic overload too, because CAD is technically designing. Like, if you're doing CAD, you're designing something.
I don't think that's true. I would push back on that.
I know. This is why I'm saying it. I think it's a little bit of semantic overload, like, where design means two different things. Like, you could say, like, I know how to draft, but I don't think a lot of people would use the term draft. I think they would use the term, I know how to design.
Well, it'd be
like,
the reason
come
I
up
push,
with designs
the
for
reason
it.
I push back is I say, if we were a chair company,
yeah,
and I could draw a chair, that doesn't mean I know how to design a chair.
No, I agree. That's what I'm saying. I think it's a little bit of semantic overload because I think he heard, you need to know how to design. And he's thinking, you need to know how to draft.
Yeah.
You're like, well, I know how to draft. I know in concept how to do this thing. But you mean you need to know how to design at an artistic level, not at a conceptual level.
You need to draft beautifully.
Yeah.
And you're,
which is design, by your words is design, which I agree. Yeah.
And so it's, you know.
Because he could just have heard that and been like, check, easy. Yeah. You know?
Well, and I think a lot of people do that. A lot of people say, well, I hired an architect.
Yeah.
Like that's going to solve it. It's just like, so?
Yeah.
It's just like, no, you basically hired someone who knows how to draft.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't mean you have a well-designed house.
Right.
And that concept is hard, foreign. It doesn't make sense.
Well, I think the other thing too is, like, maybe the architect is going to check a lot of boxes in the engineering field too.
Yeah.
Like, they will help structurally shore up your house. But also at the same time, if you want to have a designed house, maybe the architect isn't the guy to go there.
Well, I mean, you're challenging some things that I think I should clear up. I think success, okay, for a well-designed house is something that's beautiful, mm-hmm. okay? Not something that functions properly, although that's important right. too, but because there's a lot of architects who know how to build or design a very functional yeah. house that I don't think is beautiful.
Right.
And so when I'm qualifying design, I'm qualifying being able to design something beautiful in an historical and classical sense.
Yeah.
Okay. And that doesn't mean they all need to be classical temples. It could be a vernacular house, but with historic precedent, with details that are well thought out and beautiful and kind of cohesive, yeah. right? And so I think that is the
key.
Yeah, it's the secret sauce yeah. that people aren't getting, that people aren't yeah. understanding when I say design, because you brought the point home. It's just they thought I meant being able to draft in CAD, and I'm yeah. not talking about that at all.
Yeah. yeah, which is crazy. Well, okay, on this topic of like finding someone who knows how to draft in CAD and versus like finding someone who knows how to design, how much does hiring an architect cost? Like, what's the price point to a homeowner who's like, oh, I want to go build a home?
Well, I mean, they're $100,000. A good architect is $100,000 plus person.
Good architect, mm-hmm. meaning checks all your boxes.
The guys that we've recently hired.
Yeah. Well, sorry, not salary position, but I'm like per house, they're $100,000.
A set of plans is costing $30,000 to $100,000.
Okay. Because like Tim homeowner calls you and goes, hey, I'm trying to do an addition on my home. Help me with your architect's
$30,000 to $100,000.
Sweet.
We're doing that all over the country.
Yeah.
And we're helping people with all kinds of houses, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
In most cases we're fixing details.
Yeah.
Get the proper windows, get the proper materials, mm-hmm. get the proper roof pitch, get the proper dormers, get the proper columns.
Yeah.
You know, do the proper entry.
Which is funny because you're saying we're fixing details, but what you just described could massively morph the face of a house.
100%.
Like massively.
Well, I mean, you know, we're helping this guy in a place not far from here, and he
keep your secrets.
I just don't want to call him out.
I know, I'm kidding.
And so he has a really elegant house, okay? But he lives in an area where getting good designers is really hard and getting good materials really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so he ended up, if he had built this house, and this is probably going to be a $5 million house, could be as much as $10 million.
Wow.
It's a nice house.
Yeah.
And if he had built it the way we'd found it, when it would have looked like a McMansion.
Hmm.
And yet we're going to take 6 to 8 things and refine them and make them better. And this house will look
yeah.
classic, elegant, timeless.
Yeah.
And it's all in tweaking the details. He had the wrong windows. He had the wrong stone. Mm-hmm. He had the wrong roof details. He had the wrong dormers. It was a Palladian layout, and the parts and pieces as it laid out into the other elements was bad.
Yeah.
So, right? It ended up being, you know, 8 things that were all 2 to 5% each
yeah.
that ended up, you know, 10 of those at 5% is 50% of the house.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, just to fight that one person who's thinking right now in their heads, like, that's worth $100,000. I don't know about that. Like, just thinking about those details and how they would massively affect the change of the house. Like, even just swapping out the windows will differentiate a proportion where it needs to fall. The window's now going to need to fall in a certain part on the home. And then it may even raise the actual
people
structure
just
of the building,
make sure yeah, people structure. Don't understand how big those small details
right.
are.
And then even like getting columns wrong, getting roof details wrong, having a roof end in a certain way, having a pitch of a roof differently, like all of those things will actually massively impact the roof and the structure of the house. So it may.
And the problem yeah. is unless you've been trained to look for it, you know, they could be look, and I get this a lot from clients. He goes, I don't know what's wrong, but there's something wrong, right? They see yeah. it, but they don't know what the things
totally.
Are. And that's the reason those Instagram videos have gone so crazy.
Yeah, done really well.
Is because it's just like, very simple, look how we're changing it.
Yeah.
Look how we're changing it. These few things, and it's dramatic.
It's such a visual world.
Yeah.
Like I think a lot of times you even get in those meetings, like I've shadowed you in some of those meetings where you're talking to your client, you're like, oh, do you want to do this? You want to do this? What do you want to do? How do you want to handle this? And it's like, I can't visualize what we're talking about necessarily. And so even just getting the visuals and like seeing a lot of the stuff, yeah. That's so much more helpful. I think people can really resonate with that more because it's got to be so tangible. Like, because, you know, a lot of times I'm just sitting in the next room or whatever, and it's like, all right, so do you want a colonial house? Do you want a Mediterranean house? And I'm like, I've got like vague pictures in my head of what that means, but I don't really know.
Well, when clients come to us to build a house, they're typically saying we like this.
Yeah.
And so we had a client recently, she said she wanted a Spanish colonial. Okay, well, what does that mean to you?
Right.
Right? Do you really want a house, a Spanish colony, say from the West Indies, that, you know, the kind of houses that were built there, is that what you mean, the Spanish colonial?
Right.
Or do you mean a colonial house
with barrel tiles on the roof?
Yeah. Do you want Santa Barbara? Do you want how much Mexico is there?
Yeah.
And so you end up with these dials on these things that they've heard a term before and they kind of, oh, I really like that.
Yeah.
And so they hold on to it. But what they really want is something else. Sometimes they want, you know, Spanish
exactly what
colonial,
they say. Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of times, these words that we throw around, especially traditional, can mean a lot of different things.
A lot.
A lot.
Even colonial can mean a lot of different things.
100%. And there's a lot of four different periods. Bad colonials. There's a lot of good colonials.
Yeah.
And so what's the difference?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to think. I don't know if we've wrapped our hands around this enough to help people understand kind of what's going on.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm sitting there going, because when you brought up the AutoCAD versus design, I think that was a great point of like, okay, well, wait a minute. You know, I can see guys going, well, wait a minute. What's the difference then?
Yeah. Well, there's a difference between head knowledge and like art knowledge, you know? Like you can conceptually know how to do something, but then also playing with the pieces and putting them together. We just did the video on the pediment and you're saying play with the pieces. And right now, like in this very moment, I have not gone back to North Bennett Street and like played with the pieces and putting them together. So right now I'm sitting here and I'm like, how do I do that? You know, but I know what you mean. I know what you're saying. I know how all the pieces are going to function. But when I do it, am I going to do it right? Am I not going to do it right? Like there's so much, but I think a lot of that comes from trial and error.
Well, so that helped me kind of put this in framework. If you're a builder out there and you've got a design build team, okay?
Send me all of your designs and I'll say yes or no.
Yeah, I want to, I guess I'm trying to, you know, there's probably a lot of successful design build architects out there or design build firms out there.
Yeah.
They don't need to hear this. But if they wanted to elevate their game, okay, if they wanted to kind of raise the bar, then they need to get their design better. And design being, you know, historic precedent, design being the architectural details that matter. For instance, do you know that a column has to have entasis or if it's just a straight tube, it's going to look bad? Do you understand that? Do you understand how to shrink and increase the size of a column so that it's beautiful, so it's proportioned properly? Do you know how to rebuild an entablature? Do you know what a porch ceiling should look like? A lot of people can hear that and go, well, yeah, I know what columns and porches, we do them all the time. Well, you may be doing ugly porches. And what I was looking at the best people in the state, the best jobs, the best thing. And I was always trying to refine my eye, trying to refine.
Well, what's your barometer for the best? Because you've already said that you can pay a lot of money. And
usually
then,
the past. Usually it's looking to the past.
Got it.
And so when I see new porches without an entablature, okay, where there's just the post stuck up right up under the porch ceiling, I know that those are, you know, that's a bad detail.
Yeah.
Okay. How many of you guys out there, your design team is doing a porch column right up under the or right under the ceiling? Well, how many understand that there's like five different ways of doing that well, you know, and you know, can you walk your team through that? That's the kind of subtlety I'm talking about. Of design and crafting an eye and things like that, so that it's timeless. And that's really that word, I think.
You have a top three things you see the most that you're like, don't.
Window sizes.
Dormers.
Columns, dormers, and eaves.
Okay, so wait, let's just go through them. Just give us a breakdown.
So columns are what I was talking about.
Entasis is the biggest thing.
Is the biggest thing. That means that the bottom third of the column is bigger than the top
two-thirds.
Yeah, two-thirds. And the two-thirds, it gets small at the neck. So that if you measure the column at the base it's 12 inches. It's, you know, 10 and a quarter at the neck. And so.
So what is that? 1D.
It's 5/6D, I believe is what it is.
5/6D.
Yeah. Okay. And so in any case, columns is one thing. Understanding that antithesis. Two is that realize that the column on a Georgian versus a Federal versus a Greek Revival versus a Victorian versus an Arts and Crafts, all are five different column types.
Are they all the different orders? Is it?
No, they're different architectural styles. And the columns are expressed differently on each of those different styles. And do you understand that, right?
Yeah.
So it's not just columns have entices in the thing, but a Georgian column is going to be probably bigger than a Federal column.
Okay. Keep going through them all. This is interesting. Like, what are the columns? The five different types of column.
Well, the Georgian columns may be bigger than the Federal. The Greek Revival column is going to be probably bigger, more massive. Greek. It's going to support a bigger porch. It's
probably going to go up two stories.
Yeah, going to look at that temple front. The Arts and Victorian column can be anything. They're inventive, crazy, eight-sided, you know, crazy capitals. The entablatures could be bracketed. The entablature could have all this kind of crazy ornamentation on it. And then the Arts and Crafts, you go back to a simple column, usually Tuscan in proportion. So it's a big, thick, heavy column. It's a strong column, usually one story. And so, you know, and large piers, right? Large square piers, obviously part of this. So, right, there's the columns. There's columns,
that's
right?
That's awesome, yeah.
People get columns wrong all the time, okay? Dormers is another one. There's doghouse dormers. There's gable end dormers. There's shed dormers. There's all these different columns. And within each style, you end up with a personality in that style. And so, you know, a shed dormer, very popular in the Arts and Crafts area, is a rustic, simple dormer. And
which one's the shed one? It's the one that has a flat roof.
Straight flat roof. And so those end up being pretty typical in the Arts and Crafts period.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go back to the Federal or Georgian era and you look at that dormer's is 95% glass. And then you have these small pilasters on the outside, but a lot of window, not a lot of dormer surround. And so
that's one of the most common mistakes that you say all the time is there's not enough glass on the windows.
The percentage of glass to the face of the dormer should be, you know, 80 or 90%. And sometimes it's 50%. It looks silly.
When you're looking at it, when it's 50% and you're like, that should be 90% glass. Just when I'm saying you, Royal you. When I look at it and you say that, I'm always like, and then I see it done right, and I'm like, oh, yeah, no, 100%. That's crazy. Even one of the guys in my class, Jacob, he was like, your dad put out a video on dormers. I cannot see it. Everywhere I go, I'm like, oh, look at that. Two small windows. Look at that. Two small windows.
Oh, it's stuck in his head now?
It's stuck in his head. He can't unsee it, which is awesome. I feel like that stuff is good. That's like me with blinds now, or shutters.
Yeah, shutters are another one.
Shutters
are so anyway, what you're hearing is that within these styles, the columns are subtly different. The dormers are subtly different. The windows and window styles are also part of that tradition, right? That, and I've talked about it when I've talked about the window and the glass and everything. Victorian windows they're bigger. They have bigger sheets of glass. The technology is better. And so they have 1/1 and 2/2 windows.
Yeah.
They're usually tall and thin. Arts and Crafts windows are more stocky. And so these personalities, these style differences come around. And I was talking in Florida, and there was this historic house, probably the 1890s. It had 2/2 windows. And then there was a back porch that had 3/1 windows. And I was like, well, that was added in the Arts and Crafts period. Right. Very clearly, the size of the window, the mutton bars, all those things have changed from that to the other style. There's that big a difference. And so Eve's detail is that I see a lot of cottage-style houses with a boxed eave. Okay, a boxed eave is a more traditional classical thing. A cottage ought to have timbered open tails, right? And so I see they'll have a timber-framed house or a timber-framed-looking house, but then they'll have a boxed eave. And I'm just like, they're messing that up, right? It's just not consistent. And so, again, these are all examples of small things that are like 2-5%, 3% things that—
It's helpful to have all these laid out.
You change five of them, and it's 25% better.
Yeah.
And and you're like, oh, okay, now it's starting to make sense.
Right.
Now I see.
Yeah. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
So I'm trying along. when we're talking about, you know, architects and draftsmen and all the different things,
these are the little things that they don't know that you wish they would know.
Yes, these are the things that separate a real quality draftsman, a real quality architect from the run-of-the-mill draftsman. It's just they don't get it, and you know, the homeowner can't look at it and go, I don't know why I don't like it.
Right.
And so, but then you walk them through it and they go, oh yeah, mm-hmm. Okay, now I see it.
There's also something with proportions too. Like, I feel like proportions is like 98% of the battle. Like, if everything is properly proportioned, I know this is kind of common sense, but it just, something being out of proportion can really throw off your
visual of the house. It has to be, I think actually scale and proportion is hard to
pick up on. I feel like that's the one, though, that's like the most beautiful when it's right. And maybe you disagree with that, but like, I feel like that's the one where I start to go, oh, I love this house. I don't know why. I couldn't tell you why. Like, we were looking with Richard at that Head in the Heart house or whatever, the place in Annapolis, Maryland.
Oh, yeah.
Hammond Harwood. Yeah.
What'd you say?
Head in the Heart. It's a band.
Yeah.
Hammond Harwood house.
It threw me.
And that front entryway was so well proportioned. I was like, this is awesome. And it just kind of speaks to you, you know?
That one is a great example of a beautifully proportioned. That's why Thomas Jefferson said it's the most beautiful entry in America.
Right.
All those details were beautiful on that thing.
And you're just kind of like, oh, this is right. It just looks right.
That's a good example.
It just feels good.
It's a good example.
Yeah. I don't know. I love that kind of stuff, though.
Yeah. And so we're trying to wrestle with, what are the important details when we do a plan for a house that they've got to at least get these five things right? We're literally building a library of what those things are so that we can, the whole team can plop in the right forces and pieces so that we get it right. We don't have to, my expectation is not that we're going to, you know, have $1 million sets of plans. My expectation is that we're going to have really good plans that have really good details that people care about.
Right.
That's what we're trying for.
Yeah. Okay. Just wrapping up this topic, Alice, it does a lot of sales, does a lot of sales calls.
She's in charge of all our sales now.
Yeah. SOO or CSO, Chief Sales Officer. I don't know. I'm trying to make up an interview. It doesn't matter.
Chief Sales Officer.
So she gets calls all the time from people, and I feel like she fields some of the riffraff occasionally. Mm-hmm. You know, not that that's a bad thing, but just kind of part of the job. People, I think, see your videos, resonate with it, and go, hey, can y'all design something for us? And then you go, great, the design is going to be $30,000 to $100,000. And people go, oh, but y'all are actually reasonably priced in the comparison of everywhere else. Like, they're not insane plans. They're not, it's Brent Hull, so it's really high-end plans. It's like, we're just doing plans like everyone else. We're doing them right. We're doing them well. And we're charging what everyone else is charging. That kind of astounded me today when you said that. I was just kind of, when Alice was like, people don't really realize, but we're like being competitive. We're not trying to be, you know, hoity-toity. We're designing, and plans just cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like, to get people to do this, it costs money.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a $100,000 person on staff. You've got to charge, you know.
Yeah. You got to justify the funds.
We're $150 to $250 an hour for those people. It's just, you know, we end up getting into the hourly business. And so, which isn't ideal, but it's what we're doing.
It ends up being the hourly business because you're just,
because the homeowner doesn't always know what they want.
Yeah.
And so you go down this direction and then they go, oh, we want to go over here. And so you ended up chasing them around this thing, trying to, you know, massage what they're really looking for and what's right. And
to serve them.
Yeah. That's not you're following the lead. You're not driving.
It's not a bad thing. It just, to make it financially make sense, you can either charge an obscene amount of money up front or you can do an hourly.
Right.
Yeah. Which makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
Hope
that helped, guys. There's a lot to that, a lot of nuances.
Well, I feel like just as we've been talking about, like, master builders who can do it all, you're one of the people in the country right now who can do a lot of different styles, who has a knowledge of a lot of different styles. Not trying to toot your own horn, but I'm just kind of saying, like, I don't know how common that was back in the day, but there's a reason that people are resonating with your videos and a reason that people are, like, looking at a lot of this stuff.
I think my gut is that I think we're getting historic precedent right more than most people are. Mm-hmm. I think that we that there is a nostalgia, there is a reminder, a remembering of great places we've been to.
And how well they've been done.
Yeah, and if you get those details right, for those things that we remember, you are creating something that's better.
Yeah.
And timeless.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys for watching this episode of the Passion for Craft podcast, and we'll see you on the next one.